Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, an open letter to D&D.
Oh, okay.
Hasbro proves they're a 100-year-old company.
Okay.
Hobgoblin Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And Pathfinder 2nd Edition Remaster Project.
Okay, yep.
All right, so let's start with... So the writer of Slaying the Dragon, Ben Riggs, just posted an open letter on Gizmodo. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to kind of get your feedback on this. Okay. It's an interesting. So the whole idea, and I don't know, this is not necessary, and we shouldn't be encouraging Wizards of the Coast in this way. But it's an interesting approach. So the title is How to Make Dungeons and Dragons a $1 billion Brand by historian Ben Riggs.
It's not already, but okay, sorry. Okay,
it's getting there. Magic right. Is, I think, but I don't think
D&D I don't know. Is. Magic's blown a lot of goodwill. What yeah, was no. Pinkertons to people's houses? Anyway. All
right. Yes. So Ben Riggs offered an open letter to the game's current publisher for advice on not making the same mistakes twice. Mm-hmm. So the letter opens, Dear Wizards of the Coast, hi, I wrote a history of your company back when it was called TSR. I also teach 7th and 8th grade. So for the past 15 years, I have watched year after year as kids discover and go gaga for D&D.
Yeah, okay.
So
yeah.
it's not kind of a biting. So it's very different from the tone of a lot of stuff for D&D recently.
Well, I was also wondering what the connection is like. I've written a history of a company. I also teach 7th and 8th grade.
Yeah,
which gives me a lot of information to know about stuff. I'm like, oh, no, you're going with. Okay, got it. We're going with the kid angle. You're seeing a lot of cyclic. Gotcha. Okay,
yeah, the new. Yeah. Yep. So, basically saying, I want things to succeed. I've been following the D&D Direct and the Content Creator Summit. And it just like it looks like what you're aiming at is not the approach that you should be taking.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So he acknowledges that, it's a difficult product. Tabletop RPGs are a difficult product to make a lot of money off of. You spend $150 and basically you're done. That's the dungeon master too. If you're a player, you don't even have to go that far.
Okay, feelings on spending $150, but anyway.
Yes, right. So, there's no need to purchase anything ever again after you buy the core books. Mm-hmm. And now with things that are in Creative Commons, you basically have 5e at your disposal.
So in other words, just purchase reams of printer paper. Okay.
Yeah, right. Just get a good printer. The thing that he says that is from the very start that was amazing about TTRPGs is that they're infinite. Right. You can, have started a game in 1974 and still be playing that same campaign.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's something very different from anything else. So he likens it to a bottomless bottle of vodka or a car that never breaks down. It just goes and goes.
Okay.
So the recommendation that he has, and I'm not sure I agree with this. I don't know. It's very American in its approach.
All right.
But the most successful models to get the most people into what you're doing have been sports and religion.
Oh, Christ. All right. Where is this going? All right.
Right. And so he says, what you need to do is focus on the dungeon masters. So literally,
they haven't been.
Well, yeah.
No, sorry.
They,
all right.
I think they definitely have been. But he's kind of talking about a new way, and I think this is where the religion comes in. Make them, give them the tools, and make them more evangelists for the hobby, because they basically have to do that anyhow. Basically forced to do that to get people at the table. Mm-hmm. To be able to run a game, you got to convince people that it's worth
solo
their time.
Game, my friend.
Yeah, yeah, right. Anyway. And he says they've been doing that so far, and literally they've been doing it for free. So what you should do is be focusing on them, making their lives as easy as possible and giving them as many tools as possible to make it easy. And an interesting example he gives is someone may be a Critical Role fan, mm-hmm. but they'll go and try to find a D&D game to play in, and they'll never become a D&D fan just because there's a lot of barriers to finding the right group, understanding the rules, and mm-hmm. kind of getting into it. So I thought that was an interesting point.
It's a valid point, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so his experience as a teacher is seeing his students with the starter set. And he said the starter set does a good job of teaching the game, but there's so much more that could help DMs quickly understand what their objectives and things they need to do in sessions and how campaigns would run. And since they've already got the connection to celebrities and things like doing audio adventure summaries mm-hmm. that are the official, this would be the approach. This is how you would do this. Use this NPC to do this, And but saying that what they've released so far as the adventures and campaigns are a wildly mixed bag. So where you start, you wouldn't even know where to begin. If you had some knowledge of the history, maybe you'd want to play some classic adventure. But if you just went through things as they release them, some are good and some are terrible. Right. And so it might be incredibly discouraging to actually drag your players through some of this stuff and say, no, this is really fun. We're having fun. So a couple of guidelines he recommends. Mm-hmm. 1 to 3 authors maximum on a campaign. And the campaign should be pitched by authors and designers. So pay your game designers, give your writers royalties, have a consistent format. Playtesting should be measured in months. Books need to be shorter because the kind of the modern, you know, attention span and ability to, okay. you know, time that people have, and use 21st century layout and design. And something that he really talked about was kind of the downfall of TSR, but wants to return to is the box set. So okay. everything should come in the box set because that would give you character portraits, handouts, maps, all the little things that game masters spend so much time collecting to actually run a game. And, you know, a lot of the times digitally, they're doing that as well. So, yeah, so just the, this whole thing is refocus on the DM because these are the evangelists. And and basically, the only thing that's a little creepy about it is it's kind of pitched as it's like a multi-level marketing program. If you get 20 new DMs that are evangelizing 20 new DMs the next year, then 20 times, you know, the exponentially, you'll get this growth and then you'll have Super Bowl numbers very soon.
I guess so. Like the difference there is like...
But what does the top DM get?
I can see like, okay, yeah, the religion thing. Like, okay, yeah. Like... Usually the person running the game is the one who buys everything. Okay, no, not usually. Like, it's often the person who buys a game and is interested in the game that then has to recruit people to play, and that person often ends up being the one to facilitate the game, right? Yeah, I certainly can't argue with that logic. I also can't argue with the whole thing about, hey, like, what do you like? Pay people a decent wage to write these things, give the writers royalties, and you know what? Okay, like, maybe... Like, we talked last week about how, like, companies are just kind of, like, taking off people's names and the credits and just, like, blah, 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 whatever, founder, right? So, like, no, like, put that back, like, front and center. Like, this adventure written by whatever, right? And if the books, that's not a bad idea. Like, if the books were shorter, right, in the adventure books, and if you put out, like, even if you put out, like, two or three or, like, six a year, right? Mm-hmm. Even if people go... crap, love that author, right? Like, there would be enough. People have different tastes and be like, you know, you'd probably do decently where, like, some people, I don't like this guy. Other people, oh, I really like this author, right? Like,
yeah.
But I think that's probably a decent idea. So, sure.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I thought that was a very kind way to try to explain, you know, Hasbro, you're focusing at the on the wrong stuff and you don't even know what you're doing. Like, they're putting so much effort into this digital platform, which may completely fall flat because they don't even know what people want yet. Right. They haven't even, like,
well, they do now after that creator summer, hopefully, right?
They haven't even tested things to find out and to even know, like, who can even use this stuff because, you know, you need a gaming PC to run your, you know, virtual tabletop. That's insane.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I wonder... Okay, not for Hasbro and not for WotC because, fuck them, right? Other people, like, take this approach, right? Like, maybe not Paizo because whenever they're doing okay, but, like, other smaller companies, right? Just like, okay, like, yeah, take this advice. Like, make an all-inclusive, like, starter set that's kind of small, that walks people through how to play your game, right? Don't assume that people are going to know how to play your game. Just teach them.
Right.
Unfortunately, you're not going to have the, like, eighth grade kids aren't going to be going, oh, whatever this is, in, like, the Target or Walmart.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's where it kind of falls down, right? So, I don't really know what the solution is here.
Yeah, it's interesting. But, yeah, I think that the barrier to entry, because, and I think it's just because of the origins of the game. It was, like, taught, you know, being a DM was taught by oral tradition.
Well, it kind of,
like,
had to be. Yeah, right. This is pre-internet. Like, where were you going to go to find stuff, right?
You must seek out the wise man that knows how to run a dungeon crawl. Yeah, it's so it's very different now because there's so many resources. But most of those are free fan-made stuff. And so, you know, WotC really needs to step up and do official stuff. And then they could also say, you know, this is our way to play, and, you know, what's your, you know, find yours. But this is, like, you know, why?
Sounds like Burger King. Have it your way.
How we're aiming, like, all of our adventures.
Like, or do what, again, not that they need help, but, like, do what GW was trying to do, but don't fuck it up, right? Go look out for the content creators that are making that, like, accessible stuff or building your first whatever, and sponsor them, right? Don't just bring them in-house and then say, here's your cease and desist. Don't make anything unless we tell you to, right? Like, don't do that.
Yeah.
And, that's all the advice I'm giving for Hasbro.
Yes, right.
They also, don't send Pinkertons after people just who got product 2 weeks early. Who cares?
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, speaking of Wizards of the Coast, and there was this hombre, this ornery hombre named Old School MTG.
Okay.
And this hombre was making a video. It was a Saturday morning in his house, and there was a knock on the door, and what he described as some rough-looking, some rough-looking men, heavy-looking guys showed up at his front door. But Old School MTG was quick on the draw, and no, actually, they just came and demanded everything, and he turned it over. So, yes, the Pinkertons, yes. So that does prove that Hasbro is a 100-year-old company, because the first thing that they go to solve any sort of leak or early release of a product is call the Pinkertons. They'll break strikes and crack heads for you.
Yeah, really. So
they'll get back your magic cards.
Yeah, magic cards.
Yes, magic cards. So I hope this guy... I mean, it sounds like they just offered to replace the product, but he should have, if he still likes this company, he should have free cards for life. He should have every release for life, because they, no authorities were involved. Just private security were hired to go into this guy's private residence and take his private property that he paid for just because it was, 2 weeks off of on the release schedule.
Well, he got off lightly, Jeremy. They could have taken his fucking kneecaps,
right?
They could have pulled a Nintendo and garnished his wages for like the next lifetime he has, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. And the threats were jail time, huge fines, and if you make us come back, we're going to bring the police, and then you have to show us receipts for every single card in your house because we're suspecting that you stole these. Right. And it's like, geez. Yeah, they're accusing him of theft. So, and then they gave him a number to call, so he talks to a very charming, person at Wizards of the Coast who apologizes, and the YouTuber's explanation was he was dealing with a seller that wasn't familiar with Magic, that mostly did Yu-Gi-Oh and Pokemon, so the titles of the sets were very confusing, and maybe he didn't know what the moratorium was on and what he couldn't release when, and it's just ridiculous. So May 12th, so in 2 weeks it will be publicly available. So instead of turning this into a positive sneak preview, like, let's take this mistake and like contact this guy and say, okay, we'll get you some subscribers and views because you're going to be the first person talking about this, but we really don't want this to be happening, but here, let's support you and blow up this guy's channel and let him be doing free advertising for you. Instead, it's like, okay, send the thugs in.
I don't know how much more I can talk about it, because there's only one side, right? Yeah, it's like, why? right? Like, the one of the explanations I saw online, and it's amazing, people will go to bat for a company that sends out private security firms to basically, like as someone said online, you want to like mess with Presec, play a Netrunner, right?
Yeah,
like, play Netrunner. Like, I don't know. Is the story element being spoiled 2 weeks earlier than usual? That's the only explanation that was online. And in my opinion, not fucking worth it.
Yeah, right. And it could have quieted this. Yeah, it could have made this very quiet. Like, that video probably didn't have enough views that if they asked him to take it down right away, he would have obliged. I said, we'll just send you a bunch of free stuff, to take the video down. And I mean, he could have turned this into a really positive thing or made themselves look reasonable. But instead, they have to be threatening. It's very funny. And this is actually not the first time something like this has happened. Mm. So in 2021, the same sort of thing was done involving Pokemon cards. So I think that's back in Nintendo's hands. It used to be Wizards of the Coast, but I think Nintendo took that back. So Nintendo did call people and used a private investigator to go after people with advanced releases of Pokemon cards. So, yeah.
It just boggles my mind.
It is. It's really strange. It's strange that they can't handle. So there must be such poor communication, because there should have been like marketing guys or legal guys saying, no, this is not how we do this.
Well, no. I think like someone brought it up online. Like, this is exactly the point, right? Like someone said, it's possible Watsy didn't even know what the Pinkertons were. Like, that's the point. Like, the company gets plausible deniability, right? And they're like, whoa, we didn't tell them to. No. Why is there a kneecap sitting on our desk? Yeah. We didn't tell them to do that. That was all them, right?
Right.
So, yeah, plausible deniability. It is entirely the point of having outsourced
security. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's very strange. I don't know what I mean, and they've had, it's just like, I think Matt called a WotC the gift that keeps on giving, because
it is. Like, how much more are they gonna fuck up? And more disappointingly, mm-hmm. people are still going to fucking bat for him.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like, what is there anything this company can do for you to go, oh
yeah,
done? Right? Apparently not. What do they got to do? Like, eat a baby live on stage or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the baby really kind of had it coming, right?
He wasn't a magic player.
No, exactly.
But yeah, it's interesting. America has really cultivated this brand loyalty, this fanatical brand loyalty. And I think it's just because, you know, people don't, I mean, if you don't watch enough sports or you don't go to church, you got to fight with somebody about something. So it's like Coke versus Pepsi, and you know, you got to have
DC.
You got to have this thing that you're standing up for, and everyone else is wrong. And yeah, it's a weird thing. So yeah, you will have people go to bat for really bad behavior.
That's why making something a lifestyle brand is like the most important thing you can do from a corporate standpoint. Like, yes. What's the product?
Yeah.
Doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
we got to make this a lifestyle brand so that any critique of the brand is a critique of the people.
Yeah, right. What are you saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Whoa. I'm not a 5E guy.
You're just saying I'm not a 5E. You insulted D&D. You insulted me. No. No, I didn't.
Do I look like a 5E?
You know, I get that. Like, a couple years ago, after, you know, getting into Alien RPG, like, mm-hmm. someone was saying, I couldn't really fucking get into this game. And I started to respond being like, and then I stopped. And like, but like that knee-jerk reaction of, you've insulted this thing I like, took me a second to go,
Yeah.
Who the fuck is this bozo? Why do I care? I like the game. That's kind of all that matters, right?
And you're waiting for that 20th Century Fox check to come for the development.
I wish. If a 20th Century Fox check or Free League check did come,
yes.
I would chill the fuck out of that game.
The weekly shill cast.
Exactly. Yeah. Just rebrand everything. Yeah, 20th Century Fox. Free League. Yep.
Nice.
Offer still on the table.
very, very odd. Yeah, odd news, and I just don't know why they can't figure out how to roll with these punches and how things work. I think what it is, though, is these corporations are looking at YouTubers and people on Twitter as just scum that they can just stomp on. You know, it's just like they don't realize that they have enough of a platform, and the information gets out there so easily that they can't just, you know, sweep them aside or just send some thugs to deal with the situation.
Those people and the YouTubers and all those people would not exist without us and our
product.
Yes,
right. Yeah, they are parasites.
They
that's
are.
Right.
They
oh,
are.
Wait, that's us.
Yeah. Hey, we don't shill anything. We're not parasites.
That's right. Not yet.
Not
but
yet.
As Chris said, we're willing.
Boy, howdy. We would parasite the hell out of anything, wouldn't we?
Just cling on. Well, let's have some good news.
All right.
So we teased this last week. Mike Hutchinson, the creator of Gaslands, has been working for the past 7 years on a fast-paced and thrilling rank and flank tabletop miniature war game. And it has its own setting. So it's takes place in the fantastical underground world of Rotwerlden. So simple, adaptable rules. And the thing that was very compelling about this is it's scalable. He says, without any kind of real problem with time or rules, you can just scale it up to an epic size or keep it small.
Interesting. Okay.
So using the artwork from the graphic artist Crom, mm-hmm. On Kickstarter now is the rulebook for Hobgoblin. So there's a free quick start to download the rules. Yep. And they've got some videos, too. So Mike did himself some examples of how to play the game. The interesting thing about it is you're not removing – there's no casualties. You're not removing figures. You're tracking doom tokens.
Right.
So each unit takes doom, and when they've had too much and can't save against it, they're just gone. So it's mostly just making units flee. So I think that's why it scales better, is because it's not points of damage. It's like effect of doom. And then there's a cascading effect of panic that happens. So it seems like a really elegant system that you just have across the whole table. Like, you know, your forces are clashing, and then you just have this panic that just like, what's going on?
No, as someone who is interested in, and I skimmed the quick start, mm-hmm. right? And it looks like there is a setting, but you're allowed to basically build your own units, right? Mm-hmm. There's kind of like a standard, almost a bit like Lion Rampant or Xenos Rampant. There's kind of like a standard stat line right. for your type of unit, mm-hmm. and it costs a certain number of points, and then you can add on right. kind of abilities and stuff to kind of create whatever kind of unit you want. But I did notice that the standard gaming recommended is like 2,000 points. Now, yeah. I have no idea how big that is. Mm-hmm. There's also like a size, like a full unit size, like not right. a model base yeah, size, right, right. like a full unit mm-hmm. size for the different units. Like infantry is like between something like 100 to 140 on their long side.
Yeah, right, right.
Millimeters, mm-hmm. right?
They give dimensions.
So that's yeah, why yeah. it's kind of, I guess that's why it's scalable, and you can use kind of any number of figures, and right. you don't have to pull off individual figures for movement trays. But as someone who's interested in, like, simplifying bookkeeping, mm-hmm. I was wondering, how are you going to do, like, woundless kind of things? Like, oh, you're like you said, you're adding doom tokens, and I think certain effects, if you roll over the amount of doom that something has, or like under the amount of doom something has, there are effects.
Right,
so
right.
it's not, let's just like, eh. It's not like D&D style hit points where nothing happens until you hit zero. Mm-hmm, it's kind mm-hmm. of like an increasing chance of negative or positive effects as you accumulate doom on a unit.
Right. Yeah, I like that a lot. And I like, so this is, even though there are STLs involved for printing your own troops for the for your armies in this campaign, it's miniatures agnostic, basically.
Yeah.
So it's giving you the ability to use, you know, Kings of War, Warhammer, Old World, Warhammer Fantasy, any kind of, you know, rank and flank game that exists. Can
those, or just those, cut yourself some squares of cardboard.
Right.
Right. Like, honestly, that's what you can
do. Yeah. I'll be used. Yeah, but I like that idea that if you've had a because, you know, Games Workshop is slowly getting ready to release their boutique version of the Warhammer Fantasy.
As boutique as Kingdom Death Monster?
It's probably going to cost a lot more.
Yeah. At least with Kingdom Death Monster, you get the possibility of titty.
Yeah, right. Right? That's right. That's
which is completely turning me off that game. No, thank you, right? But I was kind of making a joke, but whatever. But yeah, I don't doubt that whatever GW produces will be as expensive mm-hmm. as that, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be as disappointing as their plastic release of Horus Heresy. It's just, yeah, why even bother? They're just trying to lure people in and try to keep as many, you know, maybe regain some of the people that they lost with Age of Sigmar, but yeah.
Really? Okay, I've kind of brought us on a tangent, but yeah. like GW is a model company that also makes rules.
Right.
Right? Let's be honest.
And has to change them often to sell models.
Yeah, yeah, and change them often. Like, why not, right?
Right.
So, yeah, it is, I think we talked about this before, it's nice to see 3D printing is not as accessible as it could be, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not there, right? As evidenced by the fact that all the crap you have to do with, like, the resin and stuff.
Right, right,
and the fact I can't put one in my apartment, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, the rise of home printing hopefully will usher in a new age of, like, more miniature agnostic games mm-hmm. and more game agnostic models.
Yeah,
right,
right.
Like, I had to quit because I'm just spending too much, but I was supporting a couple, like, STL Patreons, like One Page Rules and Highland Miniatures and, like, Clay Beast Creations, and, like, they're producing miniatures, like, or STL files, rather, that could be used for certain things, right?
Yes,
they're
okay.
legally distinct enough where right. GW is not going to, like, slap them with anything, but there's, like, hey, here's goblins, here's dwarves, here's your imperial humans, right, whatever.
Right.
So, like, you can obviously use them for existing games, mm-hmm. but, yeah, I want to see how the hobby grows kind of unshackled from GW.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hyperbolic.
Yeah, that'd be nice to see. But yeah, but Hobgoblin, things like Hobgoblin are a good start. So the setting is an endless maze of interwoven tunnels, caverns, and catacombs. So forever growing downwards beneath a dead frozen surface of the world. And so an interesting thing that they add too is cursed artifacts. Mm-hmm. And there are also, you have magic cursed artifacts and fortune cards that help you overcome situations or maybe save units from, right. from okay. routing. And things. So, yeah, nice. So the every decision in the game pushes towards brutal efficiency and smooth, quick gameplay.
I think one of the golden rules that I read at the beginning is, like, whenever a rule is in doubt, you go with the rule that results in the most doom.
Oh, nice. Oh,
where, yeah. like, normally it's like, okay, roll a die and just kind of figure it out. To where she's like, apparently doom is very bad in this game. So it's like, no, whatever is the worst outcome. And, like, that being written there, just, I like how doom counters are something you can numerically track, and I bet it would be easy to go, okay, well, I don't like it, but this is clearly the most doom, so that's how we're going with this one.
Right, right. So Electice Studio is who's publishing this with with the designer, and it's going to be an English hardcover 128-page rule book. So 8.5 by 11, full color, glossy, and there's a deluxe edition too to kind of take advantage of.
Even the PDF one's only about like $29.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can get it. Yeah, electronic, and that still gives you the STLs, I think, too.
If you do
digital, I think you still get everything digital. So that's pretty cool. And so the book, you know, covers army creation, the cursed artifacts, movement combat, the abyssal sorcery. So all the sorceries, underground, abyssal. Darkness, the fortune cards, procedural scenario generation system, narrative scenarios, and then multiplayers. So three or more players can be involved. So they're going to be printing the rule books in Lithuania, not China. That's good. And the accessories and other things are going to be done in the U.S. And they're expected to be delivered by September of this year. So it's going to be a quick production because it's not a huge amount of stuff. Yeah. So a quick production of the book. So looking forward to that. So so that's Mike Hutchinson. And if you played Gaslands and like those rules, this is a great Warhammer alternative. And so it's funny too that this is running because Warhammer, whatever the event is that's happening this weekend, they're making the announcement for the return of old world Warhammer fantasy battles. And we'll see how disappointing that's gonna be.
I am mildly curious about the rules, right? Mm-hmm. Just because I want to see. Back to GW, I want to see the iterations of how things are getting streamlined and
what they've what Age of Sigmar and stuff has taught them, because basically Age of Sigmar made them change 40K, and I don't think anybody's really happy about that. So we'll see what where they're going, but you know, things are just going to be, if you want the elf lord on whatever, it's going to cost a fortune now, because it's going to be
I hate to say it, but I understand the pricing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. You've got your army. You're only going to need one of these things. We're going to price it the most expensive as opposed. Like, I get why you do it. Right.
Yeah, I'm just really tired of the British YouTubers that are, they're not really shills, but they're so defending. I don't know if it's like hometown heroes or whatever. Defending Games Workshop so much.
Lifestyle brand.
So that's exactly it. It must be that thing, because they say, is this an expensive hobby? Well, not if you were into boat racing or motorcycles or whatever. This is a very cheap hobby. Of course, it's plastic and paper. That's not even, those comparisons are so ridiculous. Like, well, if you were into, whatever.
Is your hobby building scale models out of blocks of cocaine?
Right.
Then this is pretty cheap.
This is cheap compared to that. Yeah, but the excuses and the comparisons are always so just illegitimate.
Come on, Jeremy. How much does it cost to feed and house your rare Siberian tiger,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
Like, it's nothing compared to that,
that's
right?
That's true. I do spend much more on the tiger.
I mean, you have to rent out a whole zoo, right? Come on.
Yes. And lastly, I wanted to we've talked about they were already doing this with the rules, and now they're doing an official printing of this. So Paizo announced Pathfinder Second Edition Remaster Project. So four new books, they're kind of core books for Second Edition, are going to get remastered. Two are going to come out in November, and the others to follow next year.
So, out of curiosity, what are the four books? Because I saw something where they kind of likened it to like four new entry points to the Pathfinder hobby, which to me seemed excessive, but I kind of want to hear what the books are.
Yeah, the core books. So the first two coming out are the Player Core and the GM Core books. And then following will be Monster Core and Player Core 2. So I guess it gets like more subclasses and everything. Yeah. Yeah. So they're not, I think it's just the base books that would be like in a box set or whatever, a gift box set.
That's going to run you about, what, $200?
Yeah, I think they'll probably be around that. Yeah, they didn't give any prices, but it's going
to
be
their
standard
book.
So it's, everything's going to be compatible with existing second edition items and everything. There's going to be comprehensive errata, rules updates, and they're trying to make the volumes easier to use, so easier to find. And they still already, Paizo does a pretty good job of like colored borders and stuff, so you know what section you're in. You're like, oh, this is spells, let's get out of it.
Combat flip. Sorry, that's lovely.
Yeah, so they're going to help try to reorganize it a little bit. So, their statement that they released in time, the Pathfinder Player Core, Pathfinder GM Core, Monster Core, Player Core 2 will be replaced. We'll replace the existing. Oh, so they're changing the name. So they're going to replace the core rulebook, the Game Mastery Guide, Bestiary, and Advanced Player's Guide.
With core.
Yeah, core. Right, okay. Everything's going to be core. And so I think the big move here, though, is they're taking all OGL reference out of the books. Yeah, so that's the big change that's going to disappear, and maybe everything will be listed under
ORC.
Yes. Yeah, so they're reiterating the existing books are still valid. There's just going to be, you know, some important rule changes that kind of came with this update. So it is basically like, you know, reprinting with errata and doing some organizational improvements. So the other things, moving away from the OGL, including the ORC. So in the meantime, Pathfinder's remaining projects will stay on schedule. So July's Rage of the Elements hardcover to the Lost Omens campaign, everything will continue. So this shouldn't interrupt anything as far as if you've got campaigns or you're continuing on to the next part of one of their published adventure paths, it's all good. And same with the Pathfinder Society stuff. Right. So so Paizo keeps on Paizoing in the face of all this WotC nonsense. So that's good. So we'll see how they do. We'll see if they take a bigger piece of anything. The new there's a Kickstarter. We'll maybe talk about that. It's still in the midst of it. Alchemy Virtual Tabletop is on Kickstarter now, and they're supporting D&D, but they're also supporting Pathfinder, and they're doing it's more like you can do maps and tokens and things, but it's more theater of the mind and atmospheric different framing,
virtual smoke machine.
Right. And music loops and stuff for different effects. So they're getting supported there. So we'll find out when these tabletops start reporting stats of game sessions and stuff, how Pathfinder's competing after. Well, I guess we'll never see numbers about who's playing on that D&D. They'll fake how many accounts they have, but we'll never see what Wizards is actually going to be doing.
I guess I would like to see numbers of I don't know how you would judge it about physical players, mm-hmm. and we're all physical, but physical players versus online mm-hmm. players, right? Because harkening back to what we kind of said earlier in the episode, if we're looking at Paizo, we're wondering if they're going to take a bigger chunk of the hobby. Well, then honestly, I think the way to do that is to have access to people outside of the hobby the way that D&D does.
True.
I'm sure Paizo books and stuff and even Evil Hat and other stuff is advertised on Amazon, but I don't know how you would do it, but if any other kind of mid to larger size TTRPG company would look at challenging WotC, it would be getting a starter set into mm-hmm. Major retail chains, right, so that anyone who doesn't already play walks into a Target or a Walmart or something, and they see they go, that looks cool enough, let me get it, right?
Yeah, I think that's true, because the model, I think that's a flawed model that Mantic has, is just trying to get disgruntled Games Workshop, Warhammer people that are this is too expensive, fuck this hobby. Oh, here's a cheaper version.
Right.
That's not a big player base.
You're getting money from it, right? Yeah. So I'm sure, but...
Yeah. But I think you're right. The being a path into the hobby, is what they need to be. So they can't just benefit from WotC's mistakes. They have to actually have their own ways of bringing people into Pathfinder. Yeah. So we will see. We'll see. And I wish that, I guess, Meetup. There's some apps and stuff that people would use that might be able to give you some stats about real world sessions and things. And then local game shops could report that and stuff. But I'm curious.
I don't know how you would.
But it'd be cool to collect that information to actually find out what people are doing. And it's going to be disappointing because it's all 5e. But anyhow, that's going to do it for this week. Yeah. So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always, until that site burns down. It's Hivemind, Hvemynd, where I'm apparently angering people by calling out the fact that equating playing D&D to equate to having to buy from Amazon, use a car, or wear clothes, or use electricity, which all contribute negatively to the environment, is a bullshit analogy.
Right.
I've apparently angered a lot of people.
But if I told you I felt naked without my 5e books, would that...
Personally, I wouldn't care, right? But it was when you go no, man, people have to play D&D. No, the fuck they don't, right? And no, you don't have to make content for D&D, right?
Right.
I get it. It's the biggest game. When people are saying I won't be able to pay my bills as a content creator unless I make stuff for D&D. Cool. Well, you know what? If everybody in my mentions telling me they wouldn't be able to make it as a game designer if they didn't make content for 5e, if you all just jumped to a different place together, right? Kind of like the way unions work.
Yeah,
right? If you all just did it together, you'd be able to do it.
Right.
But what do I know, right? Anyway. Yeah. So how about you?
Bad. Yeah, so I am still doing my single panel gag cartoon.
And how many people have you pissed off?
not many. Yeah, actually, I do okay. But it is a rambling live stream. So I draw my two cartoons a week and have some snacks from the Japanese convenience store, which have been pretty good recently. I've been lucking out. So that's Abuse Cartoons on YouTube and Twitch, and then Abuse Cartoons on social media. If you want to read the cartoon, the past 20 years of the cartoon are available on gocomics.com/domesticabuse. And if you like what we're doing here with the weekly, please visit upturntable.com. That's a website for everything. You can watch a giant unboxing of Frosthaven and an upcoming Monster Hunter World
unboxing.
That's
going to be giant. Yep.
Yes.
Looking forward to that.
And if you'd like to support what we're doing, consider becoming a patron, patreon.com/upturntable, and be a weakling.
Yes, the strongest of all supporters.
And let us know what you want to see on the weekly.
Monster Hunter unboxing.
Yes, some more Monster Hunter unboxings. And just let us know and interact with us. And also, the audio for this live stream goes out on the RSS audio feed, so you can listen to it on any podcast player. And and subscribe on YouTube or Twitch to get updates when we go live, so you can comment, hang out in the comments with Matt and Miguel. So the chat that's running, so be part of this yep. thing running up between us right here.
I should do it this way, right?
Yeah, right.
I'm used to being on camera. It's over here.
So thank you for joining us, and we'll be back again next week.
Later, mortals.
Goodbye.